Episode 5, Alone Together. Last time on Dragon Shield Kingdoms, Vicar's Conquest. Saturion Duchesne, the Wyvern Citrine, her mother Portia, and friend Andros followed General Karasuf Vicar's directions through a secret passageway in the walls of the capital city of Sylvania to escape a mob of Gaelist cultists. They traveled through the Black Forest until they came to the Jet Fortress, the hidden headquarters of the Democratic military. Vicar provided rooms for them to recover, but Portia grew dubious of his intentions, believing he meant to keep them prisoner so that Citrine would agree to follow him. Instead, Portia and Andros threatened to stay at the fortress indefinitely and even sell the rarest of war relics unless Vicar returned safely with Citrine and Saturion both, complicating his vow to High Mage Valera to kill them if necessary. Saturion grew excited at the prospect of traveling on the road and learning dustcraft from the Wyvern. Later that evening, Vicar sought an audience with the 16 governors of Arcania, demanding an answer from the leader of the Gaelists to why they attacked Citrine. The leader explained it was a misunderstanding among the more zealous of his followers, and promised it would not happen again. After the governors left, the Gaelist leader confided in Vicar that Sylvania would soon become a dangerous place, and it would be better if he did not return. Vicar then sent a letter to his friend and Lieutenant Volos, warning him of the danger to come, and his growing suspicion that the madness they seek might originate with the cult of Gael. How to Atone.
"You're awake,"
Portia said as Citrine slowly rose, holding her head in her hand.
"Where are we?" "We're in the Jet Fortress," she said. "General Vicar brought us here."
Citrine's eyes became saucer-sized as she tried to jump up from the bed.
"We have to get out of here."
"Shh, sweet baby girl. Lay back down."
"Those men," Citrine said. "I killed them."
The waves of the sea at the fortress's back rumbled outside the window.
"You had no choice,"
Portia said.
"They were coming to gut us both." "They're going to kill me," Citrine said. "And I'll deserve it."
She collapsed back onto the bed.
"I am the monster the Gaelists claim I am, aren't I?"
For a brief flash, Portia was not looking into the face of a young woman, but her little girl, pigtails and all.
"Of course not," she said. "Come, we must find a way out of here," Citrine said.
Portia put a gentle hand on her daughter's shoulder and put just enough pressure to keep her seated. She shook her head.
"No, Citrine. There is nowhere to escape to.
Tomorrow you will join the general as the democracy demands. And if you truly wish to atone for the lives you took, you will use your power to protect the company from harm."
"But I don't want to go,"
Citrine said, her voice a whisper.
"I know. The General and I have come to an understanding." "What do you mean?"
Citrine asked.
"He understands that he must bring you back safe and sound to me, or I will haunt him for the rest of his life,"
she said, tears in her eyes.
"But I don't want to go,"
Citrine said.
"What about you? What about the bunk?" "Don't worry about me,"
Portia said.
"I'll be fine. Andros and I will stay here until you return. We're squatters now, I guess." "But, Mother..."
"No buts," she said.
"Sleep now, little girl. Sleep while you can."
"You may have many sleepless nights in your future," she almost said. Portia did not have to coax her daughter much, so exhausted she was from the immense energy she channeled earlier in the scrimmage with the Gaelists. She was asleep before her head hit the pillow, snoring lightly to the rhythm of the waves. The next morning, Saturion was wide awake when the servant came to get him for the morning meeting. He had not slept a wink, and knew he would soon regret the decision, seeing as how they had a day of hiking ahead of him.
The servant led him into a dining area where Andros sat drinking from a mug.
Hello there,
he said jovially as Satyrion grabbed two rolls off a platter.
Ready for your first tour of duty?
No, Satyrion said. Does it matter?
I suppose not,
Andros said. He stood and pulled Satyrion into a hug, nearly choking him on his own bread.
Be safe, boy, Andros said, and do your best to keep the atmosphere light. Everyone could use a laugh on the road. Your job is to keep them from remembering where they are for as long as you can.
Aren't you going to tell me to take care of Satyrion? Satyrion asked.
Ha! I asked her to take care of you!
Good choice, Satyrion said.
Jester, the entire company is in the valley except for you! Screamed the servant. Move!
As Satyrion lugged his trunk behind him, he ignored the servant's barely contained whisper. Freak. The servant had not been exaggerating, and Satyrion gasped as he crossed through the fortress doors. Below him, filling the valley, were all manner of men and women. Soldiers, dust crafters, medics, cooks, wagons, supply cars, horses, blacksmiths, armorers, archers, cavalry. The youngest was half Satyrion's age, and the oldest twice his father's. Skin tones of every color from the Isles to the Wraithlands stood waiting.
Are they all waiting for me?
Satyrion asked the servant. No, Vika said, appearing silently from the shadowy fortress hallway.
They're waiting for me.
That makes sense, he said.
Then, remembering his new role, he hollered into the valley.
I give you your excellency, General Karras of Ficker!
Satyrion made a show of overexcited waves and bowed deeply, removing the jingling jester hat from his head to touch his nose to the ground. Across the valley, his company gave him the Arcanian salute. Two hands on either temple, fingers out to form a vague wing-like shape.
Thank you, Jester,
Vika said, his voice booming around the valley with magically enhanced volume.
For the rest of you, there is no need to use such an honorific. I am not royalty, I am not your excellency, nor your highness. In my daily life, I am no king nor tyrant. I am a humble servant to the people of the democracy. My name is General Karras of Ficker. You have all been summoned to come with me on a journey to the Outlands. We do not yet know the length or duration of our journey. Only that we will be gone until we discover the source of disturbing reports of madness spreading in the westernmost territories. For some of you, this will be your first time away from the comfort of your mother's breath. For others, this will be a third or fourth tour. And others still will undoubtedly not know how to conduct themselves when faced with the possibility of an ongoing venture such as this. To all I have this to say. We are always in the service of the democracy. But while we are on the road together, we are not a democracy. I take responsibility for the lives and deaths of all those in my charge. You will do as I say when I say it. I am not a king, but on the road, you will obey my commands. Is that understood?
A soft murmur ran through the crowd.
Is that understood?
Yes, sir!
Good. Then we are off.
The first week. Citrine refused to ride a horse or be carried in a carriage. She refused a cot or a sleeping robe. Did not partake in Satyrion's nightly shows. Nor did she speak to anyone. She stayed to herself, thinking about the men she'd killed and the power she could not yet fully control. As the company left the sprawl of Sylvania and turned north from the main road, Vika insisted she ride in a palanquin next to him. You're too valuable to risk falling off a horse or getting hit by a stray arrow, Vika had said.
Do you believe we will encounter many stray arrows on this journey?
Citrine asked.
One never knows,
Vika replied before ordering her to close the palanquin curtain. rumors about the platinum-haired girl who massacred men in the streets had spread through the company like wildfire. Everyone avoided her, save for Vicar. And Turi, who swung a cream pie at her face.
"Hey!"
she said, unable to dodge in time. The cream splattered across her cheek and fell into her bowl of stew.
"I really thought you'd duck that,"
he said, jogging over, a gaggle of soldiers too young to shave laughing. He gave her a wink.
"Sorry about that." "Not as sorry as you're going to be," she said,
picking up the self-refilling container and chucking it at his face. It plopped against his nose and hung off its bridge before sliding down his black robes and smearing them white. The crowd went wild.
"Okay, I see how it is,"
Satyrion said.
"Do you like flowers?"
From an inner pocket, he produced a flower with 7 different colored petals. He squeezed the stem and water shot out, forming itself into a galloping unicorn and collapsed onto her head. She screamed from the cold and clutched for his robe, closing her hand on a kerchief. Satyrion ran, the kerchief trailing behind him from his robe, growing ever longer. It had no end, and Citrine realized it must be enchanted. She closed her eyes and called to her dust, felt it stirring inside her, inside the kerchief, and spoke to it silently. She told it to transform. In a puff of silver dust, the kerchief grew scales and a tongue and hissed. Satyrion shrieked and flung the snake from his robe up in the air, where it returned to its original kerchief form and tumbled harmlessly to the ground. Both he and Citrine breathed heavily as the crowd, larger now, applauded. They looked to each other, then both took a bow, grinning. After the show, Satyrion found Citrine by herself just inside the company barrier. Dustcrafters created a low-powered force field around the company to keep the most basic forms of projectiles and animals away. Maintaining the field required an immense amount of dust and concentration, so they only did it at night or when they were stopped for longer than normal.
"It was nice to see that, you know," Satyrion said.
"See what?"
she asked. "You smile," he said. She rolled her eyes so hard they almost cracked in her skull.
"Smooth line."
Satyrion grabbed at his chest as if stabbed through the heart.
"You got me," he said. "But really, I haven't seen you that happy since we met at the bunk."
"Feels like a million years ago,"
she said.
"Yeah," he said.
"I guess you didn't make it into the Guild of Court Mages," she said.
"Nope. Turns out I was destined for greater things."
"Like?"
"Like cartwheeling."
Satyrion attempted a cartwheel and fell flat on his face.
"Ow!"
Citrine cracked a smile but tried to hide it.
"You're not a very good jester, are you?"
"About as good as you are at hiding your feelings," Satyrion said. "Still beating yourself up, huh?"
"You don't know what you're talking about," Citrine said, anger flaring.
She started walking back to camp.
"Wait," Satyrion said. "I didn't mean anything by it. You were just doing what you had to do."
11 men died because of what I did," she said.
"You just haven't learned to control your power yet," he said.
"Don't you think I've tried?"
Satyrion shrugged.
"I don't know. I don't know much about you, but I'd like to learn."
"Here we go," she said. "Another line?"
"What?
No.
Look, you want to learn how to control your power, and I want to learn Dustcraft. They say the best way to learn is to teach, so why don't you teach me?"
Satyrion placed 2 hands together in front of him and bowed.
"Master Wyvern, I seek your guidance."
He glanced up, smiling, hoping he had at least gotten her to crack a smile. She did not.
"Just leave me alone," Satrine said. "I'll be the best student ever," Satyrion said. "I promise. Look, I've already pretty much mastered two shimmers. Pretty impressive, no?"
Satrine stared, dumbfounded.
"Are you serious?"
"As a dragon attack," he said. "Hey, neither of us expected to be out here. It just might make the time go by a little faster and a little easier if we could at least pass the time together. So what do you say?"
Satrine considered it. She had to atone. She knew that. Could she start by teaching this halfwit a few magic tricks?
Seemed as good a place as any.
"Fine," she said. "But it's Satrine, or Trini, not Master Wyvern. Got it?"
"Got it," Satyrion said. "My friends call me Turi."
Practice.
"Not like that," Satrine said, correcting Satyrion's dustcrafting form.
The two were huddled in the back of a tavern, velvet bags of different colored dust spread out before them. Vicar's rowdy company took up most of the remaining tables. They had come to a stop in one of the larger villages 5 days outside of Sylvania. Many such cities existed, in which the fashions and fortunes of the capital influenced the people nearby. Known as the Circle Center, the village was a favorite stopping point on any traveler or trader's adventure, as it was conveniently located as a crossways toward any of the cardinal directions. Vicar warned them to enjoy the downtown while they could, as the next stop in a village of any size wouldn't be for several more days at the earliest. Satyrion held his index and middle finger together, with the ring finger on his right hand bent at a 30-degree angle, and his thumb and pinky in a semicircle formation clutching a pinch of copper dust. Sweat bubbled on his brow as he concentrated on the copper. He rubbed his pinky and thumb, coaxing the dust, and managing a slight glow as it flew from between his fingers to a fork on the table.
"That's it," Satrine said. "Keep going."
Satyrion grit his teeth as he rubbed his fingers together, willing the dust to animate the fork. The fork clattered from side to side, hovered and nearly stood upright before collapsing to the table. Satyrion slammed his fist on the table, knocking over his ale and crushing a small yellow flower in the process.
"It's impossible," he said.
"It's not," Satrine said,
apologizing to the customers next to them as she cleaned up the mug. Without looking, Satrine made the hand formation. Dust flew from between her fingers and surrounded the fork and the spoon next to it. The two jumped to attention and began to dance. She let the form go, and the cutlery went still.
"Easy for you to say," Satyrion said. "You're a wyvern."
"Do you want me to help you learn dustcraft or not?" Satrine said.
"I do," Satyrion said.
"Then stop complaining and do it again."
She placed her palm over the empty bag of copper dust on the table and filled it. Satyrion reached into the bag next to it, withdrew a pinch of orange dust. He felt it buzzing in his palm as he blew. It scattered, surrounding the yellow flower, bringing it back to life. Satyrion's face broke in joyous laughter. He was like a child discovering he could walk for the first time. Satrine smiled and almost held his hand.
"I have something for you," she said.
"You do? What is it?"
She took a book out of her bag and passed it to him across the table.
"Just what I always wanted. Another book."
He was nonplussed.
"Just read it," she said, pulling both hands back.
"Sure," he said. "Right after I make this fork, bring me a piece of that guy's steak."
That night, Satyrion opened the book and began to read. Bends of the Bow, Dustcraft for Beginners, authored by Low Mage Augustus Martin. While an infinite amount of dust exists in the universe, that does not make it infinitely accessible. Special dust crafters, called channelers, have the ability to siphon dust from the fabric of existence itself. Unlike wyverns, who are born with the innate ability to use a near infinite amount of dust without training, it takes years to become an adept channeler, and years more to pick out certain strands of dust from others. When one channels, one might create a gathering of yellow, blue, and green dust, for example. It takes time and skill to separate this gathering into the desired strands. The time-intensive process of siphoning dust is one of the reasons why it's so highly prized and used as currency across Arcania. Pure strands are often worth more to those who know how to use them than gold. Mixed dust, on the other hand, might as well be useless. While dust crafters might purposely combine strands of dust to great effect, raw mixed dust has little effect whatsoever. One must always be on the lookout for those claiming to have dust for sale, as the practice of faking this substance has become particularly prevalent in the unregulated markets across the continent. Each ounce of dust requires the average channeler 8 months to siphon. Adept channelers might cut this to 6 months. Beginning channelers can expect to spend anywhere between 12 and 16 months to siphon their first raw ounce. One can better appreciate the skill of a wyvern who takes no time at all to channel all the dust one could ever need. That is why, even in the capital of the democracy, pure dust is difficult to come by. Reserved for the court of mages, those with means, and the military. Each military commander is afforded a limited supply of dust for his or her dust crafters. Quarrels between the guilds, the military, the court, and the Jester Society, all of organizations are common, as the jesters are afforded a slightly larger allowance of dust to use in their enchanting and performances. While some in the democracy argue that the mood-lifting quality of their acts are well worth the expenditure, plenty of others believe better uses for dust exist. Most religious among us take particular umbrage to the Jester Society use of dust, believing it sacrilegious. The ministers of the Gaelist Order, for example, believe dust to be a physical form of all Mother Gael's scales, and as such, should be reserved for only the most pious of uses. Enchanting flowers to spit water, as the Jester Society is wont to do, does not meet their standard. He fell asleep and dreamt of Citrine's proud eyes when he made that fork fly. A Village Notice. Nearly a week later, the company came upon a market in a new village. Most markets were willing to give representatives of the democracy anything they required. They were not happy about the prospect of giving up their crops, clothes, or shelter, but they were willing, considering the alternative. To not cooperate with a general would be treated as treason, with death the lightest penalty. Even so, the pineapple vendor at the York market seemed a little more eager than usual to give away his fruit. Satyrion did not notice the sign pinned to the notice board as he took a large bite into the rotted produce. A news clipping. Madness spreads across the western region. Do not eat the pineapple. I repeat, do not eat the pineapple. Find another fruit. Oranges, for example. This notice provided by the orange growers of York. Satyrion laughed and took the clipping as a souvenir. That night, the company feasted on oranges and danced around a fire pit as General Vickers Bard Mistopheles, or Less, as he was preferred to be called, sang for their entertainment. across the fire pit, Satyrion caught Citrine's eye. Later, as Citrine lay next to him, sleeping fitfully, the yellow flower he'd saved at the tavern stood in a pot beside her. Satyrion could not believe it had been 2 weeks since they had left Sylvania. They had yet to find much of anything except hunger, soreness, and exhaustion. And yet, he found himself enjoying the journey. It was not just spending time with Citrine, although that was an unexpected boon. It was spending time with so many people at all. Satyrion had never been around so many men and women. He did not know how long this adventure would last, but he tried to relish every moment of it he could. He touched Citrine's shoulder. He woke her to do what the lonely do, together.
Vicar's Conquest. Written by Ian Spiegel Blum. Narrated by Dave Jackson. Produced by Johannes Barnson. Special thanks to Latoya Inerity and Elizabeth Nowak. Story editor Ryan Gomez of www.magicarcanum.com. Based on Dragon Shield characters and products. Available wherever great games are sold. With special thanks to all our Alpha readers who made this project possible.